What up, what up? Welcome to Mind Your Hive's Beekeeping, episode 14. It is April 17th. It's Easter Sunday right now. I'm Greg Lehman. I'm joined by my lovely wife, Kara Jo.
Hello, hello.
And yeah, it is springtime. So
it's here finally. It took a while.
Yeah, it is here. It's interesting. I mean, it's like you prepare for it. But then it hits and you're like, oh my God, I have so much beekeeping to do.
Yeah, it's kind of like a slow roll though. It seems like it's like warm and then it's cold and then it's warm and then it's rainy and cold and you can't go in. And
weather here has been really, really interesting. This year, by far, by like a week or 2 weeks is the latest we've ever done our first inspection. And we don't do the first inspection until the weather outlook looks right and it makes sense. And we didn't get the first inspection until like April 4th or 5th. Like it was like,
late.
I mean, it was like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Beekeep by the weather, not the calendar.
Yeah. And we've realized, so this is the first year we've been at this new house and this new farm we're on. And we're about 20 miles from our old property. And the climate here is totally different. Like it is 2-3 weeks different.
Yeah.
In just 20 miles. It's nuts.
It's going to have definitely an effect on our honey crop, I think.
Yeah, although I think we get like a better fall crop here because I think it's like a little cooler
later.
Yeah, I think we don't get as much of a spring here, and I don't know if we just don't have the spring flora. Like,
I don't know. It's weird. Like, there's so much early blooming at our old house, at our like where we used to live, and then you drive up here and you're like, what? Why?
I mean, you don't really see like the snow piercers here. There's way less. Daffodils, even like the stuff that we would see pop really early, there's not a ton of.
It's like more rural, so I would think that it would be different.
So shout out to our buddy Tim and his brother Tom at Everwild Farms in Horsham, but they were saying that our new property is like right on the line of, I think it's like 6A 7B or 7A 6B, but whatever the zones are, we're right on the cusp of the colder zone, but it's noticeable enough that like the map zoning, we're right there in a different zone than just 20 miles away.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it in the apiary. So yeah. All right. How's our apiary looking? What are we up to? Oh, you know, before we get into the apiary, we started mason bees.
Yeah. It's so cool. We had no idea what we were getting into. And then we showed up to this guy's house to buy them. And
yeah. Shout out Pepper Pizzino.
Yeah. Like
he's
his
awesome.
Name. Yeah. It was so
and
fun.
His wife. They're great. Yeah. I really like those folks. Classic example of like, get involved with the Beekeepers Association, you meet cool people. And this dude sent a message to our club, was like, hey, I do mason bee cocoons. If anybody wants them, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like we're in. We love pollinators. We went there. We really had no clue what we were getting. I didn't know I was getting like
a
bunch
like,
of little cocoon egg things.
Yeah. So if you know, those like hollow pieces of what like those.
Like a reed.
Yeah. Like solitary bee houses. Yeah. Solitary bee houses. He takes them apart and like each kind of straw reed thing each fall, and he takes out the cocoons and then
he like cleans them, gets rid of the dead ones, like make sure there's no parasites in there.
He like light tests them and know like that you do with like eggs to make sure they're viable. And then he puts them in the freezer or fridge, or it doesn't matter. Just
fridge. Yeah, I think he does fridge.
Over winter, like, and then when it gets warm enough, he takes them out and he gives them a proper home. And they usually, mason bees usually nest like 100 yards from where they pollinate, but
they don't fly more than like 200 yards, 300 Yeah. Is their maximum distance. So they need to be close to the plants that they
can get. That
pollinate.
And then he said by June they're all closed up, and then I guess they form within this like mud pack that they've created until October. So it's really interesting to kind of
So we just have this, he just gave us all these little cocoon egg things
in a box,
you know, and just like, you know, just in a cardboard box, and we kept them in the fridge until we got the tubes that the actual tubes. And once they came, just made like a little box, like 8 inches by 10 inch box out of scrap wood, put a screening on the back of it and some chicken wire on the front of it just to make sure birds can't peck in. And then we just put the cocoons in a plastic to-go container with a couple holes in it, and they'll emerge out of these cocoons and they'll fly out, and then they'll be like, yo, look at these reeds and these tubes right here. This is a good home. And yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we just need things to bloom.
Yeah, he had some of them in an incubator, and he was seeing what types of mason bees, because there are native and non-native species. And I was happy that he was getting blue orchard mason bees, which are native to the U.S. They're not native necessarily to Pennsylvania, but the Penn State Extension does not view them as an exotic species in Pennsylvania, so I felt pretty good about it.
And then I think there's one non-native one.
Yeah, there's one. So I think he was saying that there's two different types that we most likely got. I'm so curious. The blue orchard mason bees are adorable, and they're like this cool blue color. So yeah, they're very obvious.
Mason bees are so little. He's like, I'm in love with them. They're adorable. These things hatch out and they're so cute.
And so we're like, they don't sting, right? And he goes, no, they can sting. But what did he say? It's like the equivalent of like,
I don't remember.
He was like, it's the equivalent of nothing. Like you don't even really feel it when they sting you, because they're so little and their stingers are so little.
And they don't die. They don't have barbs in their stingers. Yeah. And like, it's the same thing as honeybees. The females sting, the males do not.
Yeah. And he even was like, hey, this is the ratio of males to females that you want. And he gave us like the proper ratio, and that males have a slightly larger cocoon, so you can tell the difference.
And I guess, is it Penn State that reached out to him, or somebody, some scientist?
Oh, yeah. Robin Underwood, who's heading up the
Michigan
bee education for Penn State.
Oh, Penn State.
Yeah.
Yeah. She reached out to him and she wants to like get involved. So,
yeah. I mean, he seems like the go to dude for these mason bees.
Yeah. He's really,
he showed us his whole setup. We hung out with his dogs. That was great.
He's into it. So we did that, and we're prepping the garden.
So there's this like huge, so this, the facility, the farm we're on, I think there was a previous owner that was turning it into a native tree nursery. So there's a lot of like really good trees and stuff around here. And there's this area that was fenced off that you could tell there was a pretty legit vegetable garden in. And that's where we have the apiary. But it's overrun with, you know, huge grasses that have died over.
And flowers. I mean, a lot of native flowers, a lot of milkweed. But it's like too much that it runs into the beehives and like it's unruly.
Yeah. So so we're looking to grow some mainly flowers, like just really native bouquet flowers. I don't know what you'd call them, but not doing as many vegetables. We'll do a lot of hot peppers for our hot honey. I'm sure we'll have some tomatoes and stuff. We'll trade with farmers for seedlings.
And then I have like a bunch of herbs for Carajo skincare that I like infuse.
Years past, we'd have like 20 varieties of vegetables going. And I mean, a whole thing, taking a little bit of a step back there. But it's so hard to get rid of weeds and plants that have just taken over a garden area like that. So we're doing a method of like tarping the center of it. So we laid down like 6 mil plastic sheeting, and you know, staked it into the ground, and we're essentially cooking all of those seeds that are in the ground. So we're gonna have it for like a year before it's gonna be ready.
Yeah, I cut some multiflora rows, and I'm planting some elderberry bushes, and just tarped, cut them, and because multiflora rows is just a pain in the ass. So I'm gonna tarp and maybe get rid of some of that. But yeah, it's an organic method to not use pesticides, and it's a long game, but it also helps with soil regeneration.
It composts all of that naturally. Yeah.
Feeds the microbes, keeps them warm, protects them. So,
yeah. So, you know, like, yeah, good way of putting it. It's a long game, but I think it's like the proper thing to really do.
Our friend, we were like, yeah, just, he's going to create a wildflower garden. And he was like, but I want it right now. We're like, you can get it next year. And he was like, but I don't want to wait that long.
Like nobody does.
If you want to do it right, do it that way.
So that's going on. We did our, like I said, we did our first inspections like a couple weeks ago. So it was interesting. We went into those first inspections going, okay, we know these are alive. You know, we'd been peeking into the top, making sure that if they had any fondant or sugar patty up top as emergency feed, make sure that they didn't need to be restored. One time, like March 24th or 27th, I put one quart of sugar syrup on all the hives because I saw like a 10-day period of cold and rainy that they were about to hit. And I was just so worried that they were right on the cusp of using all their winter stores. And then all of a sudden they hit this terrible cold, you know, streak after maybe a few warm days that got the brood going. And I just had this vision of going in and having all these dead hives. So I just put one quart of syrup on everybody to let me sleep at night.
Yeah, really.
Essentially. And I talked to a dude that week. He had the exact same mentality. He was like, I don't want to inspect yet, but I'm worried that they're going to die. And he went in and found a couple hives that had died literally, that were alive like March 20th and died March 25th. And that is just like a gut punch.
It also so sad. You know what I mean? Because
they
were
so close.
I know.
So we also, so I think the kind of standard is we use medium, we use all mediums, is to overwinter them with three medium boxes that, you know, they fill with honey. We leave four. So we leave an extra one on most of the hives. And if we come out of spring or come out of winter and there's extra honey there from the previous year, we can extract it in the springtime. It doesn't matter. We can extract it whenever we want. So we leave it on. And I'll tell you what, they used up almost all of it in all those hives. And again, we were a few years ago, it was the first week of March, we were in the hives and we were reconfiguring them and knocking them down to three boxes and letting them go. We're a month later than that going into them this year. So like, again, just helping us sleep at night. Our goal is to get them to survive. Our goal isn't to maximize the honey. It's to get them to survive, because then they come out of winter, they live in the springtime, you split the hives and now you have two hives. So whatever. But that was interesting. But 100% of the hives here, when we went in, bottom box and sometimes bottom two boxes, totally empty, not being used, no stores, no brood, no eggs. Second or third box being the main one.
Decent and even amount, the fourth box, yeah.
Yeah, decent amount of brood and eggs. So we actually flipped them all. Some people just leave it and they say the bees will go down, but we put the main brood chamber, you know, the box that had the most activity, we put on the very bottom and we worked our way up. So it's just what we ended up doing.
Even at the other apiary, College Settlement Camp.
So we volunteer for College Settlement Camp in Horsham. It's a over 100-year-old farm camp. I think like 75%+ of their children, their campers over the summer are coming in from
under the poverty line.
At the poverty line or below. And they're getting to experience this farm in the burbs that, you know, they maybe never heard crickets. Like, I mean, that's just wild to me.
Chickens, goats.
Yeah. They got,
just hanging out outside. Yeah.
It's a great place and it's run by really great people, and we're really enjoying, and Kara's kind of taking the point on it, but enjoying mentoring, shout out Karen and Josh over there to get them up to speed and get them beekeeping on their own. But they're doing like some education stuff with the bees, and it's just cool. They had bees on this property for like 100 years and then they haven't had it for,
mites hit.
And yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's what happened. But that's interesting because those hives, there's two hives and they're in the area that has way more blooms right now. And those hives are booming.
So we, because of our situation with Hurricane Ida, we weren't doing much beekeeping, towards the end of the season last year. And some people stepped up and helped us out and helped overwinter the hives. But we didn't know that they were using different equipment to overwinter the hives. So Kara gets there for the first inspection of the year a couple weeks ago. And there is this winter shim with this insulation board on the top. And I mean, actually, it was incorrectly installed. The dude forgot to put a hole in a spot or something. I don't know, but...
And then he didn't take them off in time and he left them on too long.
Yeah, so.
So the bees went up and they built all this comb all up in the top of it.
All drone comb. Just filled this whole shim up with drone. Just wasted energy, wasted wax, creating all that wax, all those eggs.
There are so many drones in those hives.
Oh, yeah.
But I couldn't, you couldn't tell where the queen was, and it, I didn't want to go through the hive yet, so I just...
Yeah, so her first inspection really was more just like a, hey, let's make sure everything's going all right, but it's not warm enough yet to crack open all the boxes, and she gets there, and she's like, what is this disaster? But it's, you're not able to just, you know, rip them out one by one and make sure there's no queen. So I think what you ended up doing is you put an inner cover in.
Yeah. And it, and yeah, that's all. Because I also didn't want to separate.
Put the shim above the inner cover.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you did that the second time. I think the first time you just left it because we had that cold snap coming.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but either way. So.
But the point of this whole thing is if you use a wintering inner cover, make sure you take it off before they're going to go up there and build brood. Because then it was just.
It's a mess.
Yeah.
So yesterday we went over and we knew the queen was below that shim. Kara had actually, you had put a queen excluder. What just fell?
I don't know. I put a queen excluder below the inner cover once I located the queen, because then I was hoping that everything up top would just hatch out.
Yeah.
But luckily it didn't hatch out because... You were like, well, you inspect, I'll do this. And it was just all drone brood. And there were so many drones already. And
here's the thing. It was kind of a, so the mites are smart. They go into drone cells because drone cells, the drone cells go from egg to emerge in 24 days. So the mites know they reproduce under the capped cell, in a capped cell. They know they have an extra like mating period inside of a drone versus a worker. And certainly queens are way quicker than that. So mites are just, they go to the drone cells. So being able to get all those capped drone cells out when I cleaned up that shim was a nice way of probably getting rid of some mites. I mean, unintended, but hey, lemonade out of lemons type situation, right?
And we fed the chickens at the farm and they love us.
Kara loves those chickens. They're great.
I just love chickens.
But hey, that place was... Those bees are doing great, and like we're excited. But, yo, it is officially swarm season. Last week we got out of a cold snap. First warm day, 10 a.m. Boom! My phone's lighting up. People are catching swarms. People are going into their hives, and they're like, "I have so many swarm cells. I can't find the queen." So here's the deal, people. This time of year, you gotta flip your boxes. If you, no, we don't have time to pull every frame. Maybe you do. Cool. But you gotta look underneath. So swarm cells grow. They make them on the bottom of the frames. They hang down from the bottom of the frames. Flip those boxes on their side and look underneath. And you can very clearly see swarm cells.
And they build them at the bottom of the frame because they really build them at the bottom of wherever their comb is. So you can find a swarm cell in the middle of a frame.
If the frame wasn't properly built out.
Yes.
Yeah. True that.
But flipping the boxes. So you used the term flipping the boxes earlier to say that we took the bottom box and moved it up
right,
top.
Right. Yes. Thank
so
you.
So just to differentiate.
That's not what I'm talking about.
Right. Literally, you tilt it on its side and you look below. You can smoke them and see if there's any queen cells, like tear open the queen cups and just see, are they... Do they have an egg? Do they have royal jelly? It's such an easy way. When we discovered flipping boxes, it was
a huge game changer. Yeah, because we started for the first few years, we had 2-3 hives. Then all of a sudden we have 10, 20 plus hives. And it's like, you can't just go inspect the whole thing, but you need to go in once a week this time of year. If you're trying to not let your bees swarm, and swarming is when they decide it's time to procreate. So bees are so unique in that they obviously, you know, queen gets mated, lays eggs, those eggs emerge as new bees. So that's one way of reproduction, but they also will just totally split their swarm into two and reproduce that way. I'm sure there's a cool term for it. I just don't know, but they do it in the spring. And
you're losing so many bees
what they'll do is they'll take the queen and like, you know, a third to half the bees are going to leave with the queen, and they'll leave a cell that's you know, been juiced up with royal jelly.
Or 20 cells.
Yeah, or 20 swarm cells. That's juiced up with royal honey, and the day they cap that cell, and we're going to get into life cycles, and we're going to get into bee math, and we're going to get into just, you know, how many days, blah, blah, blah. But when they cap that cell, and for queen cells, aka, you know, swarm cells, queen cells, they're going to cap it at 7 or 8 days. So from the day the egg is laid, 7 or 8 days later, they will cap that cell. As soon as they cap that cell, they go, all right, we left the proper cell. It's capped. We're out of here. Next warm, good day, 10, 11 a.m., boom, they're gone. So.
And you are losing bees that are there that could make you so much honey.
Yeah.
So you're and cutting that population.
You're just losing all those bees.
Yeah, like, and like what? Like a vast majority of bees that swarm don't make it through the winter?
Yeah, it's like 80% won't make it through the next year. Yeah. I mean, it might be 85% now.
I've heard
like the
so
most
many
recent.
People be like, I think it's cool, my bees swarm, just let them swarm. I'm like, is that good for anybody?
I don't want to get into those arguments, but the answer is no.
Yeah.
Here's the deal too, people. Early swarms are so valuable because you know that catching a swarm in the early springtime means those are from overwintered stock. That is a colony that overwintered in your local climate and survived.
And is booming enough to swarm.
If you catch a swarm in June, it might be like package bees that people brought and didn't know how to, you know, brought in a package. Bees aren't building comb quickly enough. They get overcrowded and they swarm. So you don't know that the genetics are local. They overwintered. But when you're catching a swarm early, mid-April, you know, shit, early May even, you know those bees overwintered here. And I mean, granted, yes, some people will like bring their bees to Florida and then, you know, bring them back up in the springtime. It's a little, you know, there's exceptions.
Only commercial people are doing that. And also, like, so you could have a swarm and, like, let's say, like, 50, 60% of the swarm leaves with the mated queen. You could have after swarms.
Yeah, so all right, we just helped out a friend of ours. He has a hive in right outside of, well, in Philadelphia, at Glen Fjord.
Yeah,
Glen
what part
Ford,
of Philly is that? I was trying.
Like, northeast Philadelphia.
Okay.
They went away on vacation, texts me. He's actually in Ireland. I don't know what the time difference is, but texts me at like 10, 11 a.m. and is like, hey, there's a swarm on the property. I think it's from my bees. And I guess he just didn't have a chance to check every box before he left because I went in there. We weren't able to catch the swarm. Somebody else came out and botched it. But I went and checked on his bees, and there were 20 plus swarm cells. I mean, they were all over the place and I couldn't find the queen, and there was two capped. So it was like, as soon as they capped it, boom, they were gone. There was, you know, probably 18 queen cells that were formed full of royal jelly, but not quite capped. And then one or two that was capped. But if say I would have just left all 20 of those swarm cells, first queen that comes out, she's going to emerge, you know, virgin queen's going to emerge. She's going to go around and try to kill all of the other cells. She's not going to get to them all. She's not going to have a chance to. They're going to start popping out. I mean, we've had a frame of swarm cells and watched virgin after virgin emerge like 20 seconds apart. It's literally like the queen laid the egg, 20, 30 seconds, laid the next egg, 20, 30 seconds later, laid the next. And then they emerge that in sync.
Can I tell a cool fact?
Hell yeah.
So queens don't spin as like large as cocoons to make themselves vulnerable to be killed by other queens during this process.
Oh, it's like not as thick of a cell wall. It's also just like stretched and bigger, but wow. Yeah.
It's cool. Right. I mean, it's like bees are kind of like ninjas. They sacrifice themselves. It's just like another ninja bee thing.
Yeah. Harry Carey style.
I don't know what that means, but okay.
So I cut out all of those cells except for like the nicest two or three left those. But what I was saying, what's going to happen is they're going to start emerging. And then once they emerge, there's two virgins. They're going to pipe. They're going to make this piping sound, which is just this, like whistle, like rhythmic whistling. and it's them going like, let's fight. It's like, yeah. Warriors, if, come out to play.
If you don't know what it sounds like, Google it so you can hear it, because then you're like, oh my God. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So we've gone into hives and heard the piping and been like, dude, there's virgins piping right now. I've seen a virgin piping from inside her cell with, before she's emerged yet, which is like, yo, she's ready.
Yeah. I remember the first time you, I didn't even know what this was. And you're like, there's piping. I'm like, what's that? And you're like, it's a fight call. I'm like, what?
I have to go back and find the, I put it on Instagram years ago, but a video of piping. It's great. So anyway, they're going to fight. They're going to beat each other up. They're maybe injure each other, maybe nick a wing, whatever. Or they're not, there's going to be too many anyway. And there's going to be secondary, third, fourth swarms. So a virgin will convince, or whatever, however they, the democracy inside the hive works, convince a bunch of bees to then leave again. So you already lost half from the initial swarm. Then you're going to lose another half with the secondary swarm. And then you're going to lose half of the next half. So by the time all those hatch out, you may have had two, three, four swarms happen. And then you're down to a tenth of the bees that you had before.
Yeah, we've caught virgin swarms. We've caught that one.
We caught two or three swarms in the same tree. Yeah. A lot of swarms later on, mid-May, late May, are secondary swarms that we see. That's, I always find that interesting. It's we've caught probably more virgin swarms than non-virgin swarms.
Yeah, I think so, for sure.
But
so
yo,
flip your boxes and check
underneath your boxes for swarm cells. And you got to do it every 7 days, because again, from egg being laid to capping of a queen cell is 7 or 8 days. So say you wait 10 days to inspect. They may have laid that queen cell. It's capped. They're gone. And you're like, I was just here. How did they swarm and leave?
Also, we were inspecting the other day and you made a good point. Like, take the boxes off, and then what did you say?
Okay, so this is a great tip for beginners, for everybody, but especially beginners that start feeling overwhelmed. So say you work a hive from the top down. You take the lid off, you check the top box. You get done checking that top box, you take it off, you set it aside, you check the next box. Every box you take off is less room for, as foragers return, for them to go do their job. So you're essentially just creating a more and more population in a smaller amount of space
in the bottom box,
in that the remaining boxes. So by the time you get to the very last box, that's the only box these foragers are coming back into. You have so many bees, and can be a little bit overwhelming. But you get to your hive, take off the top box, stack the next one on top, stack the next one on top, stack the next one on top. Now there's no boxes where the hive was, just the bottom entrance. You inspect that bottom box. You then put the bottom box back on. You go back to the pile on the side. So you're not working hive boxes where bees are returning. They're only leaving from those boxes and then going back to the original hive. Just a little easier to manage.
Yeah.
Especially, man, second year beekeepers, you know, these bees come out of spring and it's a little overwhelming for people. So just try to take it slow. Take all the boxes off. You can take your time a little easier that way. Highly recommend.
Yeah.
Take the box off, look underneath it.
Yeah. And at that point, we're just checking for swarm cells and checking to make sure there's a queen.
Making sure they have, like,
making sure they have resources.
As soon as I see they've got some pollen, they've got some nectar, I feel good. I don't want to disrupt them much more.
I like killed a worker the other day because she had deformed wing virus. So like looking for diseases.
Yep.
Deformed wing virus is just like kind of easy to spot, looking at the brood, seeing if there's any disease there.
There are hives that I like, we've gone into, and there's going to be swarm cells. There has to be. There's such this population, and then they don't, and it's amazing. And then there's hives where I go like, oh, there's not enough bees in here. That doesn't matter. They're just the types that swarm more often,
yeah,
or they
genetics.
Swarm with smaller numbers. And I don't mind bees that swarm. We have a line of bees that are from this dude. I think his name's Bill Carpenter. I think it's Bill Carpenter. He's no longer a beekeeper. He sold his operation, but he was the original discoverer of that bees can chew the feet of the mites. Mm. They're called mite maulers, or maybe they bite them in half or something. I don't know. But he was looking at the mites the Varroa mites that were dead on his bottom board under a microscope and found some of his colonies were chewing more than others. And then the ones that were, he could tell were chewing these, he continued to breed those lines and then kept noticing more and more and more mite mauling. And I don't know how many years, 20 years later, we got some of his queens. You want to pause because Duncan needs to go outside?
Yeah, I think our 17-year-old dog needs to pee, even though we just let him out before this started, but I think that he needs to go.
All right, we'll pause. You're good.
All right.
And we're back. I was able to get a queen cell from one of these carpenter queens. And I think that was 3 years ago. We have a great, 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 great granddaughter of one of those. But
they swarm.
That line, they swarm. They love swarming. Do. But I don't mind because we're checking once a week. During swarm season, we're checking these hives once a week until they swarm. And then once they swarm, until we see swarm cells, and then we make a split. We don't graft for queen cells. We don't, do the grafting process. We don't get that in depth. Just a little bit more work than I'm willing to do right now. I don't want to add another hobby inside of this hobby inside of this hobby. but I also have this, and it was backed up in a presentation recently. I think it was Juliana Rangel's presentation that they showed when queens are able to make their own. When the bees are able to make their own queen cells in a non-emergency way, so make a swarm cell, the queens were better performing. So they're just, in my opinion, this isn't based in anything. Just I feel like because of nature, when the bees are able to select the cells, select the eggs, and make queen cells from them, in the fashion of which they're in a swarm situation. I just think they're going to select better eggs and they're going to do a better job of leaving the hive in a place for them to survive versus an emergency situation where all of a sudden there's no queen and they go find any cell that's viable and let's try to turn it into a queen.
Well, and we've also seen them make queen cells out of like 6-day-old larvae.
Yeah, not good.
Also, when you look at emergency cells and you look at swarm cells are way more beautiful, fat, and juicy than
true that.
Emergency cells can just be like these little things.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So ideally, in the springtime, we're checking once a week. We see early a queen cup that is charged. So there's an egg, there's royal jelly. They're clearly turning that queen cup into a swarm cell. We then will take the queen. So we find the queen. Oh. My specialty.
Yeah, your specialty. Me beekeeping without you, I'm like just dreading trying to find queens. And I know how to do it. You're just good at it.
Find eggs. Look to the right, left, up and down of where the fresh eggs are. You're going to find the queen. we mark ours, so we try to make it easy on ourselves. But anyway, we take the queen. We take the queen and frames of... capped brood, and we move 5 to 10 frames into a new hive. So we actually will put them in a portable nuke box. We'll take that nuke box more than 2 miles away from the property, let them open them up for a day or two, and then we'll bring them back and put them into a new box, new hive. So then we have a new small hive that has a laying queen that has just emerged bees. So it's got young nurse bees. And then we have a hive that has been left with a queen cell, with a swarm cell, but they're not going to swarm because they have no queen. So we essentially just made that hive think that they swarmed.
So I think this is good. When you build a nuke with a queen, you take emerging brood because they're going to need new brood. You take some...
And they create... There's space for her to lay more as soon as they emerge.
Yeah, and they need population.
Yeah.
And then you take some uncapped brood. And pollen.
And nectar.
A frame of nectar. And then you also do one blank built out frame if you can to give them space.
Yeah. I mean, when we're doing this, we're not like, selling that as a 5-frame. That would be the recipe if you're selling a 5-frame nuke. We're moving them into a new hive So we're giving them probably 5 to 15 extra frames that are built out.
Not everybody listening has that ability.
So that's like the ideal way that we make a split. The other ways that we make a split are straight up walk away style. So say there's just a hive that is just booming and we're like, we're going away next weekend. We're not going to be able to get into this hive. Let's leave the queen, but we'll take a bunch of day old egg frames that have day old eggs, or 1 or 2 day old eggs, and a bunch of bees and a bunch of capped emerging brood. And we'll put them in a new hive. And then they go, after one day, they go, whoa, we don't have a queen. We need to make a queen. And they'll make a queen there. It's called a walkaway split. Again, I think that puts them in an emergency situation where I don't necessarily think they're going to make the very best queen cells.
You could always replace it, though, if that's what you need to do.
True that. Or our club has a really wonderful queen cell program where you get a queen cell and you install that queen cell and you make a split. You install that queen cell and it'll emerge. A virgin queen will emerge within a couple days, and then it goes from there.
One of our teachers, Vince, once said, we've gone through this and we've done this before. You're looking for the queen. You can't find her. You're trying to do this split. And he's like, the queen's either going to be in one box or the other.
Yeah. So if you take one box and move it.
Yeah. You're going to have her. And then you just make sure that there's fresh eggs in both. And then you monitor for where she's at.
Yeah, you come back a week later and you see if you find eggs.
Yeah.
Pretty simple. But let's talk bee math and life cycle of a bee. Because I think this is so pertinent. I think this is the most important thing for beginner beekeepers to fully understand. I think you just write this shit on your hands.
It's on the internet all over the
internet. Yeah, just you need to know this. But all right, so the real basic wise, from egg to emerging, a queen is 16 days. By far the quickest. 16. Just over 2 weeks. A worker bee is 21 days. 3 weeks. A drone, a male bee, is 24 days. Okay? So that's just egg to emerge. All of them are eggs for just 3 days. So first 3 days, they're eggs, and then they become a larva. And you would refer to them as exposed larva. So the cell has not been capped yet. A queen, they're going to cap at that 7 to 8 day mark. A worker, it's that 9 to 10 day mark. And a drone is 10 to 11 day mark. So a queen cell is getting capped earlier than a worker, earlier than a drone, right? And then, you know, from day 8 to 16, a queen's going to be in a capped, you know, it's larva. It's going to be in a capped cell. Same thing. Worker, days 10 to 21. Drone, day 11 to 24. Why is this important? Kara, why is this important?
Well, it's important because you need to know when to come back. Like, how long your hive is going to be broodless, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. You are doing a split, right? And you are...
I got nervous. I'm like, I don't know. Why is this important? Let me do it. I know this.
There's even more. I mean, it's also important just like, you know, understanding 1, 2, 3 day old eggs is important if you're solely just to help you look for a queen.
Also, just for like swarm cells, it's important.
Yeah. So, yeah, being able to tell when it's capped, how old it is. But all right. So think about the bee math of this all. So... say you do a walkaway split. You don't have any queen cells. You don't swarm cells, but you're like, I got to split this hive. I want two hives out of it. The hive that doesn't have a queen, I mean, the very, 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 very quickest. So I'm saying they 16 days later, they make the queen emerges that they made from day one that you make that split. So day one, they're like, yo, we don't have a queen. Make a queen. Boom. 16 days later, she emerges. She gets mated in the quickest amount of time possible, which I think is 7 days. I think it's 6 days of like hardening. Very, very earliest she's getting mated is day 7. So, all right, right there, where are we at? 16 plus 7. This is where Kara gets really
thrown on the spot. No, you're just doing the math. But wait, a queen, this is also interesting because a queen can fly right away, but she takes that long to leave.
She can't fly right away. She's to be hardened. hardened off before she can fly.
Oh, I guess her wings are ready or something, but no. Okay.
No, I mean, it's called hardening off because I don't think she can fly or whatever.
Okay.
She's got to toughen up.
Got it.
So day 7, she can go on a mating flight. The weather has to be perfect for that mating flight. So like, all right, perfect can, whatever. That's 23 days. So the very quickest she gets mated at 23 days. Then say she lays an egg that day, she gets mated.
And usually she has to try to figure it out. It takes her a little bit.
It's another 21 days before those bees are going to emerge. So you're basically very, very best bet 45 days after you make that split, you're going to have new bees emerging. And bees in the spring and summertime only live 45 days. So the bees that were alive when you made that split most likely are going to be dead by the time new bees are able to emerge. So, all right, you do a walkaway split. Something goes wrong. That queen doesn't get mated. Oh, that's not good because now you just got set back, you know, 16 plus days. All of a sudden, you're not going to have any bees alive in that hive anyway.
And they're not bringing in resources for the winter.
So, I mean, that's just like, all right, so that's a walkaway split. But it shows, okay, so say you go into your hive and you have a cell that's a queen, that you see a swarm cell and it's about to be capped. It's like right before being capped, you're able to grab that queen and move her. So our ideal split situation. You just bought yourself another like 7 or 8 days, right? So you just took 7 or 8 days off of that 45. So now you're looking at, you know, 38 days best bet, but still, you know, you're cutting it close on the bee lives. Like they might live 60 days depending on the time of year, but most likely it's 45 days they're dying. So, all right, you get a queen cell. That queen cell emerges 1 or 2 days later. You just bought yourself another, you know,
2 weeks.
2 weeks. That queen can basically be laying eggs in a week. And then you're at like 30, 20, 21, 22 days. That's no, even more than that, 30 days from a queen cell. If you put in a mated queen, you know, she'll lay a day or two later, depending on how quickly she's accepted. And that's obviously the best bet, but I don't like buying queens. I don't like getting them shipped. Kind of like knowing where they come from, blah, blah, blah. But like understanding that bee math on what stages your bees are at, when they're going to, you know, the queen can lay 2,000 eggs in a day, but if those 2,000 eggs aren't going to emerge for 21 days plus, like you might have a really low population before that you see the ramp up happen. And you also have to realize there's going to be a dip and you're going to have a lot of bees die off before the population is going to grow rapidly from there. Why else is bee math important?
The bees, why, Craig?
Without having any eggs present or without queen pheromone present, so say your queen dies, you can run into a laying worker situation.
That is a bitch. Don't let that happen.
Laying worker sucks. So laying worker is when there's no queen pheromone, there's no, you know, they're not smelling the eggs, they're not smelling larvae. All of a sudden these workers just like develop the ability to lay eggs, but they don't have the ability to fertilize the eggs, so they're just laying drone eggs. Kind of my, it's such a fun fact, but drones have, what is it? Drones have no
sperm
father.
Yeah, but they have a male bee
has a grandfather, but no father, because a queen lays an unfertilized egg, it becomes a drone. But the grandfather, because obviously that queen had to be mated with a drone, so grandfather, but no father. It's called. Oh, man, I said it the other day. I thought I had it written in my notes.
I didn't know there was a name for it.
Yeah, it's like photogenesis or something like that. I don't know. I can't remember. It's got a cool name. It's going to drive me nuts.
I don't know. But the way that you can tell if your hive is full of laying workers, because we experienced this early on, there's just so many eggs per cell.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing. They'll just lay like 6, 10
or there's eggs multiple workers that are laying eggs.
Yeah,
oh, it's not just one.
And also the eggs aren't, because they don't have the big abdomen, the eggs aren't in the bottom of the cell. They're often along this, they're stuck to the sides of the cells.
But there's so many, I mean, it's real obvious.
But it's a ticking time bomb for, so, all right, my point is, say you're not sure whether you have a queen or not. If you put in a frame of eggs, you know that there's eggs and then there'll be larvae. You know that you've bought yourself about 2 weeks time before you then have to start worrying again about, all right, and there's no, you know, there's no egg and larva pheromone. There might turn it. So you are buying yourself time knowing that the stages, you know, it's 16 days start to finish for a queen. It's 21 days start to finish for workers. Like, you bought yourself a few weeks of not worrying about laying workers. Like, sweet. Also, just like, what's the status of my queen? Like, when was the queen mated? You know, you have a new hive or something, and you go in and you go, oh, okay, there's no capped cells. All right, so she's, you know, they're all under 8 or 9 days old. Just understanding what's going on in the hive is so linked with honeybee life cycle. I feel like I'm not even doing it justice.
No, I mean, it's big deal. It's the heartbeat of the, it's understanding bee biology is what really shifted me from, like, kind of just like going in the hives and doing things to understanding and being a better beekeeper.
Something to always consider too. So say you find those swarm cells, you make a split, or any cells, you make a split, you put in a queen cell and you make a split. When that cell is about 13 days old, right? So around that 13 day mark. So it's been capped. It's 3 or 4 days from emerging. That's when the main development of wings happen for queens. And when that's going on, that cell is extremely fragile, meaning you don't want to tip it upside down. You barely want to tip it on its side. You want to be really gentle. If you tip a queen cell that's that old upside down, there's a very good chance that it's going to shift in the cell enough that the wings are going to develop. And wings are obviously super important because they need to go on a mating flight. So be really careful when you find a frame that has capped cells. You want to be really gentle with them. Should never be rough, but if it's not a capped cell, it's not as big of a deal because you're not worried about that wing development at that point. What else do we do? So when we do that swarm split, right? So we take the queen, we move her over, we leave a couple juicy, beautiful looking swarm cells in the original hive. So we know that original hive is going to start having a die off of bees. They're only living 45 days. So, you know, that queen is going to take a little bit to emerge, blah, 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 like we just talked about. What I'll do is I'll go to that split that we made, and, you know, we put a laying queen in that other hive. And I will take frames from that hive and put them in the original hive that doesn't have a queen that's mated yet. I'm doing it to just supplement some population, but also, like I just mentioned, keep the pheromones in there. It makes for happier bees when they have work to do, when the nurse bees have work to do, it keeps them a little happier. And then in case something happens, once a week or once every couple of weeks, you throw a frame of eggs in there. If something happened, you'll know it because they'll start turning those eggs into queen cells. Talked about it a bunch of times, but if you're not sure if you have a queen, put in a frame of fresh eggs. They'll tell you, like 3-4 days later, you go back and look, they'll tell you if there's a queen or not, because if there isn't, they will be making emergency queen cells. So, a lot of information there that I just spewed out in not that good of order, but
no,
it's good
stuff. I thought you did great.
Aww.
That's always good if you don't know if you have a queen. Put a frame of new eggs. Eggs are sticking straight out. That's 1 day old. And then as they lay down.
Grain of rice sticking straight up from the bottom of the cell.
And then day three eggs are like kind of.
Totally on their side.
Yeah. Also, a bee is not born when it comes out of the uncapping. It's born as a larva. The egg hatches and it's a larva. And that's when a bee is born.
So I always try to say emerge instead of hatch.
Yeah.
Because they actually hatch from egg to larva. They don't hatch when they come out of the cell.
So, but if you can pick like a day one, two, even three, if you're not sure, if you have a queen, you can put that in your hive and come back 4 days later and they'll tell you if they're not making queen cells, they're good. But if they are, that means you're queenless.
What else do you need to make sure you're doing this time of year as a beekeeper? Put up swarm traps. Free bees. In case you're not on top of things. So when bees swarm, it's pretty interesting. The scout bees go around. So the forager bees that would be foraging turn into scout bees. And they start, or some of them at least, they start going around inspecting new places to live. And it's kind of nuts. So Dr. Tom Seeley, shout out Montgomery County Beekeepers. He just spoke at a general meeting of ours 2 months ago. He spoke about water collector bees, which was fascinating stuff. But he has a few books. Honeybee Democracy was, I think, his first like really popular one. But he dives into swarming and these bees, the way they reproduce. And he said on average, the scouts will be at a site for an hour, for 60 minutes, wow, inspecting it. They literally walk like every square inch of the cavity. And basically the size that they are most into is kind of the size of a deep brood box. So we don't use deeps, we use mediums. So the perfect size for us would be like two mediums. We make swarm traps out of these big peat pots that we just put on like 6-8 feet up in trees. We make like a circular wooden lid. If you go on our Instagram, there's a few pictures of swarms we've caught that way. But they're so easy to work with. And it's like the size of the cavity it's like the perfect size. It's like X number of gallons. Read Tom Seeley's book. I'm just regurgitating his information. And shout out to Bruce Rodriguez, who was the first person that ever showed me. He's a treatment-free beekeeper and like swarm master in Pennsylvania. That was the first person to teach us about these specific peat swarm traps. So his idea. But I line them with some beeswax, and then I'll do a swarm commander, which is a swarm lure. I'll spray it on a cotton ball, put it in a paper plastic bag, put a couple holes in the plastic bag, put that in there so it's like a slow release scent.
And it works.
And it catches them. But what I was saying is when they swarm from a hive originally, they'll go somewhere in the neighborhood of about 100 yards from that location. We've seen them go 5 yards, and we've seen them who knows where they went. But I think like Tom Seeley and these scientists figured out like 60 to 100 yards, they'll stop somewhere and pause and wait. And then from there, they'll go to most likely their final destination. We've seen swarms hop. And last year, one of the swarms we caught, somebody tracked it. It stopped every like 100 feet.
Well, that queen was...
The queen had a nick on her wing.
Yeah, she couldn't fly very well.
So they kept stopping for her. But if you set up a trap, you know, 50, 100 yards from your apiary, you may catch that initial swarm. As it goes, you might catch it. And then, I mean, come on, they just made a split for you. The same way that we're liking to make splits. They take the queen, they move her.
And then you wait until they start bringing pollen in, right?
Yeah, so you can tell that you've actually like caught bees when you start seeing them bring in pollen. When they're bringing in pollen, they're loading the pantry.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise they might just be coming and going. It might just be a lot of scout bees. Read Honeybee Democracy. It's so rad that they like come back and plead the case of I have the best house. And somebody's like, I have the best house. And then they literally vote on it in the hive and they change their votes. And they go, oh, I take it back. I went and visited your spot and your spot's better. I'm now on Team Greg. And it's like Kara's still fighting for it, but
I win in the end. My place wins. It's a better house.
Ah, so cool.
And so episode 5 is springtime is swarm time. And we talk about swarms and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we got a little bit more depth into some swarm
like
talk.
Really swarm talk. Yeah. So that's a good episode to listen to.
So what are we doing right now? We're tilting and checking underneath every box once a week, making sure that the bees haven't made swarm cells. We're making sure they have space. We just added boxes onto a lot of hives. I mean,
every single hive.
They're all up to like at least 5 boxes now. And we want to keep making sure they have space. You know, they haven't capped any nectar they've brought in so far this year. But we saw like of two full supers of nectar at the hives at CSC.
Yeah.
Like that is all beautiful spring honey.
Yeah. They're bringing it in, man.
So we're like, shit, we got to make sure we put another box on. They need a little bit more space. We want them to have space to store. And before we got into splitting, I mean, we had hives that were like 7-8 boxes. It was wild.
And we're definitely going to have to split. I mean, those hives are most definitely going to build swarm cells, but we'll catch them and we'll split them. But like, I feel like avoiding swarm cells might be nearly impossible for me.
Because we're not living there and it's, you know, iffy that every 7 days you can get in, no doubt.
Yeah.
But once you make that initial split, they're not swarming again. You know, you've now bought yourself a pretty good amount of time. And the original queen that you moved over, I don't know if we've ever, unless they don't have space, I don't know if we've ever seen one of those hives swarm. We'll see them supersede her, because usually it's last year or 2 years ago's queen. We'll see them supersede and replace the queen themselves, but that's all them. You don't need to do anything. That's like nature being even more perfect.
Yeah.
But yeah, we hope everybody out there that has bees is having a smooth spring. Carriage of skincare. What are you rocking right now? Oh, bug repellent.
Ticks. I saw the first tick on Duncan today. Ugh. I was like, oh, gross.
Yeah.
So bug repellent is a tick repellent and it's also mosquito repellent.
It's legitimately good for you. It's good for even your face.
I just made my first batch and my second batch is infusing. So
what's infused? I love when you rattle it.
Soy and avocado oil, and I infuse it with, you know, whatever I have, like lemon balm, rosemary, lemongrass, catnip, and then andiroba oil, and then essential oils of like cedar, thyme, lemongrass, geranium, rosemary, citronella, eucalyptus.
All of these things have bug repellent properties.
Yeah, every single thing.
They smell good and they're good for you.
Yeah, it's good for like acne and rosacea.
Yeah, Carrie uses it in the wintertime, so.
Yeah, but in the summer, I just use it all of, like, I'll wake up in the morning, put it all over, and then put my clothes on, and then I'll wipe the dogs on it. No, I won't. I'll wipe it on the dogs.
So good for you, but yeah, now is the time.
And it lasts all season.
Oh, yeah,
It's a good value.
I get crushed by mosquitoes and I was like spraying off with DEET and just, I would get done, come inside and be like, I have to take a shower because I'm just disgusting because I'm covered in bug repellent.
Well, and you know what's interesting about this is like we would sit outside and you would be like spraying DEET, spraying DEET, spraying DEET. And I'm like, this is terrible. And it wasn't even working. Yeah. You were like, we got to go inside. I'm like, I am not living inside. Like I need to make bug repellent for Greg to sit outside because I'm not living inside. So that was kind of the impetus of it. And then it took 2 years for you to be like, this works.
Well, it took 2 years for you to nail the recipe that it was working.
That's what I just said.
Oh, okay.
Different words. Yeah.
But yeah, check out carajoskincare.com. We got a whole bunch of other products, soaps and...
I just made lip balm today.
Yeah.
Put honey in it.
Classic.
Yummy.
And yeah, as always, if you got this far, we really appreciate you listening. You are a rock star. We hope you learned something. We were drinking, we didn't even mention what we were drinking today. You were drinking the last of the Palatine pills from our trip to Suarez Brewery in Hudson, New York. I'm drinking a Forest of Maine Kolsch Wall of Time, one of my favorite beers that we make. It is Kolsch season. But again, thanks everybody for listening. We will catch you next time.
See ya.
Peace.